Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
In 2003, not long after the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, the New York City Police Department began spying on Muslims. Officers in regular clothes visited Muslim businesses, student associations, charities, and religious centers called mosques. They believed a terrorist would be able to hide easily in those areas. Then, the officers created a database about neighborhoods where people of 28 so-called ancestries of interest lived. The database included pictures, maps, and information about the personal habits of Muslims in New York City. When the public learned about the unit 8 years later, many people objected. Some activists said the unit violated Muslims' civil rights. Objectors even filed 2 lawsuits against the unit, saying the police had discriminated against them. In addition, the unit seemed not to work. Officers never used any of the information they gathered to identify someone who was likely to make an attack. In 2014, shortly after he was elected mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio ordered the unit to be closed. But not everyone believes surveillance of Muslims in the U.S. should stop. After Islamic State terrorist group attacks in Paris last November and the release of a video suggesting New York would be attacked next, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump suggested the city should restart the program. This month, after a gunman who said he supported IS killed 49 people at a nightclub in Orlando, Florida, Trump again talked about surveilling mosques and Muslim communities. But none of the experts VOA interviewed for this report believed police should watch Muslims without a reason. They said law enforcement officials should become involved only when they suspect a crime is going to be committed. These experts believe Muslim communities can police themselves. In other words, they say strong communities and families can help stop other Muslims from making mistakes. And they say professional police surveillance, such as the unit in New York City, actually makes Muslim communities and families weaker because it creates fear and mistrust. Faiza Patel works at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University Law School. She told VOA that mosques have always welcomed strangers. Now, Patel said, guests and newcomers are often treated with suspicion, and many Muslims are nervous about being followed. She said, people have stopped using mosques as the center of the community. Instead, she said, they will go in and they will fulfill their religious obligation, but then won't hang around. They go home. Patel said that, as a result, the Muslim community is losing its ability to stop other Muslims from committing crimes or terrorist attacks. Seth Jones is a terrorism expert at the RAND Corporation, a research group. He adds that families are a critical part of stopping people from extremist thinking and violence. For example, the wife of Omar Mateen, the killer in Orlando this month, knew what he was planning to do. She was reportedly with him as he looked for possible targets, including Disney World and a shopping mall. Mateen's father also said he was worried about what his son might do. But when the FBI investigated Mateen over the last 3 years, they found no clues he would walk into a nightclub and kill 49 people. The FBI says Mateen's case is typical. About half the time, a family member knows a relative is becoming radicalized but does not know what to do about it. Anne Speckard is a research psychologist. She is the director of the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism. She said, people specially trained in fighting extremism and radicalization can help families and communities. For example, parents might not want to call the police and report their child, but they might call a special number and ask for help. Why would you call the FBI if they knew you were going to set up a sting operation? Speckard asked. But you might call a hotline if you know they were going to send over a psychologist or an imam to talk to your kid and say, you know what? You really got Islam wrong here.
The United States continues to export more arms than any other country in the world, according to a Defense Advisory Service. It says U.S. arms manufacturers exported tens of billions of dollars in weapons last year. The advisory service IHS Jane's released its Global Defense Trade Report on Sunday. The report shows the international defense market increased by $6.6 billion in 2015 to $65 billion. The U.S. exported nearly $23 billion in weapons to other countries, especially to the Middle East. That represents an increase of $10 billion since 2009, the report says. The global defense trade market has never seen an increase as large as the one we saw between 2014 and 2015, says Ben Moores, who works for IHS Jane's. He adds that 2015 was a record-breaking year. Weapons sales from French companies last year were more than two times the total in 2014, increasing from $8 billion to $18 billion. The report said, if that rate of increase continues, France will pass Russia as the second largest weapons exporter by 2018. The increase in arms sales last year was mainly the result of increased demand from Middle Eastern countries. They got about $21.6 billion worth of weapons, including $8.8 billion from the United States. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates bought about half of the weapons sold to Middle Eastern countries. They got about 17.5% of all global defense imports, or $11.4 billion. Saudi Arabia was the single largest weapons importer last year. It bought several kinds of aircraft, precision-guided weapons, and intelligence-gathering equipment. Saudi Arabia is fighting rebels in Yemen and trying to stay competitive with Iran. Iran is growing stronger because Western nations have eased restrictions as part of an agreement Iran signed to limit its nuclear activities. Iran is buying new equipment for its air force and is likely to increase trade with Russia. The IHS report says in years to come, Iran could spend between $40 billion and $60 billion replacing its older airplanes. Egypt has sharply increased the amount of money it spends on defense. It spent up to $2.3 billion last year. It is now the world's fourth largest weapons importer. Countries around the South China Sea have increased their defense spending by 71% since 2009 as they try to limit China's influence in the area. The report predicts the weapons trade will continue to increase worldwide. It says arms spending will total about $69 billion this year. I'm Jill Robbins.
A large number of young refugees and migrants face many risks trying to reach Europe. So says a new UNICEF report called Danger Every Step of the Way. It reports that more than 7,000 unaccompanied children traveled the central Mediterranean Sea to escape from North Africa to Italy this year. That is twice as many during the same period in 2015. Unaccompanied means they traveled without adult supervision. The Central Mediterranean travel path is full of risks and dangers, the report says. Imamo and his brother are 16 years old. Their journey from Gambia through Africa led them to a farm in Libya. There, they worked to pay smugglers. If you run, they shoot you and you die. If you stop working, they beat you, Imamo told UNICEF officials. Social workers in Italy said some of the unaccompanied children became victims of sexual violence. The report says some girls had been raped and were pregnant when they arrived in Italy. UNICEF officials say it is not clear how many refugees are killed, missing, or detained during their travels. But the report says more than 90% of all refugee children are traveling without parents or guardians. UNICEF based its numbers on information from the International Organization for Migration. The IOM reports of almost 3,000 migrant deaths along the Mediterranean path reported from January to June this year. In all of 2015, a total of 3,770 refugees died on the same path. Many were children. The UNICEF report includes Peace's story. She is a 17-year-old girl from Nigeria. Both her parents are dead. She was living with her aunt, who was very poor. The aunt forced Peace to marry a 40-year-old man. Peace said, "This man took me to his house and made me his house girl." She told UNICEF if she did not marry the man, her aunt would have poisoned her. Peace decided to escape. She was going to travel alone. Smugglers took Peace across the Sahara Desert to Libya. She reported seeing bodies of the dead as she crossed the desert. In Sabratha, Libya, she was held for weeks in a house without windows. She heard gunshots. She heard people fighting. Peace said the Libyans in charge of her escape would not let her out of the house. She said there was no water, no extra clothes, and little food. Peace was able to travel by boat to Italy. She said some people fell off the ship and drowned. Others died on the ship. I wish my friend had told me how difficult this is. I would have continued suffering in Nigeria, she said. Peace is waiting for an asylum hearing in Italy. Almost 96,000 children traveling alone asked for asylum in Europe last year. There were a total of 1.4 million asylum requests, the UNICEF report says. UNICEF has urged the European Union to make laws to protect young refugees. Marie-Pierre Potier is UNICEF's special coordinator for the refugee and migrant crisis in Europe. She said children have every right to a better life. She told VOA children are experiencing and escaping from wars. They travel far and long to reach safety, but they still need protection, education, health care, and guidance, she said. UNICEF also called for countries to stop the refugee crisis. The UN wants nations to find solutions for children in search of better lives. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
American Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker says now is a great time to invest in the United States. She made the comment in a speech to an international business gathering in Washington, D.C. Business owners and investors from around the world attend the Select USA Investment Summit. Pritzker said the U.S. economy is almost 15% larger than it was in 2009. She said 14.5 million more people are now employed. And she said the U.S. economy is growing faster than that of any other nation. President Barack Obama also spoke at the conference Monday. Obama said America leads the world in cutting-edge manufacturing. He also said no other country is home to more foreign direct investment than the United States. But investing in the U.S. is not always easy. Small and medium-sized businesses can find investing in America difficult. Tanner Basaga is the general manager of flooring manufacturer Yildiz Integra USA. He said his company has been in the U.S. states of North Carolina and Alabama for about 6 years. Basaga said getting started in the United States was easy for his company. Basaga had advice for companies wishing to come to America. In his words, spend a lot of time and try to understand the country first. I'm Katie Weaver.
Australia is home to many unknown species. Researchers now say that it may be home to the world's fastest lunging predator. The Caryops spider is a small and flat spider found only in Australia. The spider is a predator that gets its food by killing and eating other insects. It has 8 legs and usually creates a web of sticky threads to catch insects for food. Sarah Cruz, 38, is a researcher at the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco. She spent 2 months in the Australian outback collecting 100 Caryops spiders. Cruz told the Australian Broadcasting Company, or ABC, that collecting the spiders was not easy. They usually hide under loose bark, often on eucalyptus trees. She and her research assistant spent a lot of time turning over rocks to find and catch the speedy spiders. I've worked on these spiders, this family, for about 15 years now, and I just don't really care about other spiders at all anymore, Cruz told ABC. I just like these guys. The spiders will be examined with high-definition cameras at the Academy of Sciences. Linda Rayer is an expert on insect behavior, including spiders, at Cornell University in New York. She said Cruz appears to be onto something about the unusual speed of Caryops. I've tried catching some of these spiders, and they are ridiculously fast, Rayer told VOA. I study Aussie huntsman spiders, which are also very, very fast. The Caryops spiders are even zippier, she said. By that, she means faster. Robert Raven is the senior curator of spiders at the Queensland Museum in Australia. He says Caryops are skilled hunters. The website spiders.us says that most spiders eat insects and other spiders. Spiders larger than Caryops have been known to eat small animals, such as rodents, the website reports. The website tries to offer information it hopes will show some fears people have of spiders are not based on facts. Rayer, the Cornell University insect expert, says the huntsman spiders she researches are more social than most. I am interested in the behavior and physiology that makes living in groups of cannibals possible, she said. On a broader scale, spiders are so damned interesting and understudied that they are a behavioral researcher's dream. Australia is home to about 10,000 species of spiders. Only a third of the species have been identified so far. I'm Dan Friedel.
Small human-like creatures lived in Indonesia 50,000 years ago, and a recent study found evidence of their much older ancestors. Scientists working in Indonesia say they found several teeth and part of a jawbone that date back 700,000 years. The scientists are with the Research Center of Human Evolution at Griffith University in Queensland, Australia. Two reports describing the findings appear this month in the journal Nature. The researchers said the teeth and bones are from small creatures that lived before what they call hobbit hominin. The name hobbit comes from the writings of J.R.R. Tolkien. It is used to describe members of an imaginary race. In Tolkien's stories, hobbits are similar to human beings,
only smaller. Scientists have used the term hobbit to describe ancient human-like creatures measuring only about a meter high. Not only were hobbits small in height, they also had small heads, but their feet and toes were big for their size. The hobbits are hominins, a group that includes modern humans and human species that no longer exist. The newly discovered fossils belong to an adult and two children. The older hobbit was about the same size as its much younger relative. The remains were found in 2014 on the Indonesian island of Flores. They were discovered about 70 kilometers from an opening in the ground, where scientists found the first hobbit fossils over 10 years ago. Scientists named those creatures Homo floresiensis. That first fossil discovery created much talk about what these small creatures are and how they got to Flores. The new fossils are from a bigger species that arrived on the island about a million years ago. The Australian researchers say the creature began to shrink over time in a process called island dwarfism. According to Nature, supporters of this idea think that the creature became dwarfed or smaller in just a few hundred thousand years because of a lack of food or other resources on Flores. Island dwarfism is something well known among animals. Some animals are up to 6 times smaller than their ancestors because of a lack of resources. There was just less to go around on an island. For example, at one time, Flores was home to a very small elephant-like animal. The new finding put an end to the idea that hobbits were just sick or underfed Homo sapiens, the scientific name for humans. The hobbit was real, archaeologist Adam Brum told AFP. It was an ancient human species that is separate to ours and that no longer exists on the planet today. Brum was lead writer of one of the studies published in Nature. He works at Griffith University's Research Center of Human Evolution. But there is still debate as to what the hobbits really are and from where they came. Scientists hope that the new fossils can help researchers decide what the older species was and how the hobbits came to be their small size. One possibility is that hobbits are a dwarfed version of Homo erectus, the first human-like creature to leave Africa. Other scientists have also studied hobbits. They say qualities like the creature's long, flat feet could mean that it came from a smaller, more primitive human relative. Such possibilities include Homo habilis or Australopithecus, known only from remains in Africa. Researcher Garrett Vandenberg is with the University of Wollongong in Australia. He spent 4 years looking for the hobbit's ancestors. In 2014, he was about to give up at the end of the year. "We had given up hope we would find anything. Then it was bingo," Vandenberg told Nature. He said they had a huge party with dancing and food to celebrate the discovery. I'm Anne Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.